hate to bother you, but Lord, I've got a whole lot on my mind. I know that you're real busy, but I promise I won't take much of your time. To help me make it through. I need to feel that kind of love that only comes from you. If you just squeeze my hand, let me feel you by my side. You said you'd never, never leave me. Oh, you'd always be my guide. But the storms of life sometimes won't let the sun shine through. Lord, I need to feel that kind of love that only comes from you. As a child, I heard the preachers say that you were a sinner's friend. I remember when I came to you with so black with sin. Ooh, the night you turned my life around, it seemed you made me over new. The mercy that you showed me, Lord, kept me coming back to you. You just squeeze my hand, let me feel by my side. You said you never, never leave me. Lord, you'd always be my guide. But the storms of life sometimes won't let the sun shine through. Lord, I need to feel this kind of love that only comes from you. Lord, I need to feel this kind.
Mahalo. Warm Pacific greetings to all our listeners. Sending out much love to wherever you may be. Te Ama Health is a podcast radio program focused on better health, educating and raising awareness. Sorry about that. Yes, Te Ama Health was created by a small group of the like-minded Pacific health workers with the love and support of our respective communities to help deliver better health outcomes for our Pacific people. The small role we have, working effectively alongside our Auckland District Health Board, Waitemata District Health Board and the MOH. We are a small community initiative. We connect directly, first and foremost, with our families, friends, colleagues, our sports clubs, churches, NGOs and so forth. For us, having direct contact and working directly with our families, with families who may not necessarily have the resources or know-how in terms of navigating through the health system, or have maybe lost their way in terms of how to live healthier, better lives. So we provide an opportunity to connect directly and help inform and make better choices through the right guidance and education. I think Te Ama in that sense can connect certain people and families in our local communities or others through this platform. But more importantly, I think through our work directly with our people. And yes, some of you may ask, so how do Te Ama help to achieve better outcomes for our people? They really need help through this platform. Well, that's a good question, and I get that a lot too over the years. And as I've said over before, and I'll say it again, you know, we have and will continue to achieve that through bringing in the right people, the relevant people, people who have a clear and, you know, the experience and educated understanding of health issues that affect us, or can anticipate certain trends that will have a negative effect on us. You know, just off the top of my head, one person I'm thinking of that I will be bringing on to help educate our people is his name is Tony Laulu. He's the founder of Digital Discipline. He's leading the way on how to better understand and use our time wisely with our mobile phones. But, you know, the truth is our phones and being connected to the internet is a way of life now. Finding the right balance is key. And, you know, spending too much time on our phones or internet can have, you know, big negative consequences. You know, it can become an addiction. And that's dangerous. So I am looking forward to having Tony from Digital Discipline share with us some tips on how to manage this phone addiction epidemic taking over our Pacific Islanders. So yes, as I said, important issues that affect our health and well-being, we will get the relevant pros and health professionals to provide what we need to be more aware of and make the right changes. You know, we've been doing this over the years for the love of it, knowing we help others make changes, and the belief, love and support other like-minded individuals have for our Pacific people. All this information we provide here that's the hope, can be used as a guide to look back on for anyone to help make better informed choices, make positive choices. Yes, make positive changes. Okay, so there's so much, you know, for those that listen to the news and read the paper. We're so blessed. There are so many amazing and vital services out there in the health sector, you know, getting the proper access, understanding. There are so many amazing individuals making huge positive differences with their line of work. So yeah, being a link, being a cog in the wheel, working alongside other huge organizations and systems to help uplift our Pacific people, to get them to own their health and future. You know, instead of relying on the on your local GP for meds and being a burden unnecessarily, when we can take ownership of our health. And I think Te Ama is and will be doing a great service to our people and our great nation, which has become our home for two or three generations coming from the islands to Aotearoa, New Zealand. So today I want to focus on our elderly, you know, our parents, our grandparents, our mamas, our papas. It's an area close to our hearts for a lot of us. Well, I'm guessing anyone out there with elderly loved ones. We all know that we're getting older, and so are the people we love. Getting older is something we should all celebrate, but it can be tough, as some of us in that field, you know. With an increasing number of major life changes, a move into retirement, health challenges, and the loss of loved ones, it's crucial that we have the support we need within our reach. You know, as islanders, we're brought up to love and respect our elders. We hear it a lot, but it's something we naturally do, to care and look after our elderly in their time of need. But in this day and age, times have changed, man. You know, over the decades, and the way our elderly are looked after and treated have changed too. Our values have changed. Our priorities have changed due to whatever's going on in this current environment. You know, we can go on and on till the cows come home as to why all these changes have occurred. But one thing that's undeniable though, generally speaking, is our elderly have suffered more. I think as many as 1 in 10 older people in New Zealand will experience some kind of elder abuse. But that's just the majority. Well, the majority of cases will go unreported. Elder abuse is not specific to any gender, religion, ethnicity, or income group. It may happen at home, in residential care, or in hospitals. And unfortunately, but true, is most of the time family members are the abusers. You know, older people are valuable members of society. They deserve our respect, our care, and our attention. You know, that's true. If it weren't for our parents, our elderly, we won't be here. Unfortunately, some people take advantage of the vulnerability and frailty that age often brings. And if you're an older person, you're entitled. Yes, you're entitled to the same rights as anyone else. If you feel you're not being treated right, or if you're concerned about how an older person is being treated, you can get help. And I've got some numbers here for later on. You know, sometimes things don't work as they should, and abuse can happen to older people. And the likelihood is that it's going to be at home at the hands of family members or so-called friends. Sadly, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Let me just explain what is elder abuse. Elder abuse is abuse and neglect of older people as a single or repeated act or lack of appropriate action occurring within any relationship where there is an expectation of trust, which causes harm or distress to the older person. It can be various forms: physical, psychological, emotional, sexual, financial, material abuse, intentional or unintentional neglect. Signs that abuse or neglect is occurring may include fear of a particular person or people. Fear of, anxiety for no obvious reason. Irritability and being overly emotional. Presenting as helpless, hopeless, and sad. Using contradictory statements not resulting from mental confusion. You know, that's important to know the difference. You know, they're making contradictory statements because they're scared, not because they're mentally confused or dementia. Reluctance to talk openly. For example, waiting for the carer to answer. Avoidance of the usual amount of physical, eye or verbal contact this person uses. Not having enough money for necessities or to pay bills. That's another huge one. Unexplained withdrawals from bank accounts. Possessions disappearing. You know, those are all some of the symptoms. You know, all our seniors, elderly, our mamas, our papas, deserve to be treated with respect, with dignity, and with care. I mean, the way I look at it, how I do, is treat others, your elders or others like your own parents, whatever their background or circumstances. Some more stats here, up to 70,000 elders will experience some form of elder abuse. And the sad reality is that 80% Yeah, that's right, you didn't hear it wrong. 80% of reported cases occur at the hands of family members. So I reckon that's psychological abuse. The Elder Abuse Response Service focuses on intervention and putting the needs of victims of elder abuse first. Here we go, here's the number. So the cornerstone of this service is a free and confidential 24/7 helpline. The phone number is 0800 32 66 865. Calls will be answered by registered nurses who will direct callers to elder abuse specialist service providers in their regions. As I said, elder abuse is a serious and growing problem. As we've seen, I read a couple of articles just recently online. Yeah, in recent years, many older people have lost their life savings in financial institution collapses and fraudulent schemes. Those rats. They're not alone in suffering the devastating effects. Though because of their age, they're less likely to rebuild their savings. You know, it's not always easy to tell if elder abuse or neglect is occurring. Victims are often reluctant or even unable to talk about it. I think if only, from my experience, what I've seen is if we just listen and be there instead of just hi and bye. However, if you're concerned about an older person, do something. As always, in an emergency, 111. Okay, so right now I'm going to play another song and go straight into a throwback podcast from late last year, as it ties in with our focus today on the elderly. There's so many amazing health workers, nurses, support workers and caregivers in the health sector, doing such an amazing job of caring for and loving our elderly alongside their families. Mahalo. Tony. Kia ora. Warm Pacific greetings all. To all our listeners, we've been going strong consistently since 2009. Yes, 2009. Every Tuesdays, 11:35 a.m. on 104.6 FM in Auckland, or stream live online anywhere on planetaudio.org.nz. Te Ama Pacifica Health Radio showcases Pacifica leaders and leadership stories, which share the vast knowledge and experience on how Pacific peoples can have a better understanding and knowledge around health and well-being in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And Pacific Island nations in the South Pacific, utilizing the diversity and wide range of Pacifica peoples, the personal and professional backgrounds of these leaders, exposing their struggles and triumphs in living the Kiwi dream, the reason their ancestors came to the land of milk and honey, and the learning from their journeys. Subject matter includes physical health, mental health, suicide prevention, depression, spiritual health, budgeting, financial literacy, health literacy, management, housing, employment, child and welfare services, services for pregnant women and children, education, problem gambling, police, justice department, sports, alcohol and drug services, SIFs, and all facets of life that impact on Pacific peoples. In my mind, with anyone listening in to down at the heart of what we do, it's about equity. How do we provide solutions and become sustainable, thrive? So today I am excited about my guest today. His name is Hamish Crooks, who is currently the Chief Executive of Pacific Home Care. Now, Pacific Home Care provides home-based health care throughout the Auckland region to the disabled and the elderly community who wish to stay living at home, but who need assistance. So we strive to be the best at serving the community. We strive to serve all clients with love, care and professionalism. So in the next hour, we'll be touching more in depth at who and what the Pacific Home Care Organisation is all about. We will also have a talanoa around the approach and values Pacific Home Care take and carry with our work in the community. Now, a brief a snapshot on my guest, Hamish. Hamish has worked and still works in the public and community realm for the past 30 years, almost before I was born. And I have had the pleasure of meeting him in person over the last few weeks. And it is a blessing. You know, for me, it's a privilege to work under Hamish and Louise, guidance and leadership at PHC. Very thankful. Everything happens for a reason. Good things happen to good people. So to start off, I'd like for our listeners out there tuning in over the airwaves and online, nationwide, Pacific, Australia, anywhere, I'd really like to get my guest here, Hamish, to introduce himself and share with us a lot of who he is before we get into what he does. So once again, kia ora, Hamish, pea koe.
Kia ora, Mel, and tolofalava, nisambula vanaka, malo lele, fakalofalayatu, malo ni, taloha ni, And greetings to all of our guests. Kia ora koutou katoa e te rongata e te atua. Yes, it's me, Hamish Crooks. I always say Hamish is a very good Cook Island name, but if you want a translation in Samoan and Tongan, it means Samese. It's the Scottish Gaelic word for James. And I've been around and working in our community for many, many years. In the last 9 years, I've been particularly working in Pacific Home Care. And I hail originally, born and bred in the lovely, amazing 16th island of the Cook Islands, a place called Tokorua, in the middle of the North Island. Not too far from some of Mal's cousins and that down in Rotorua.
Right of Aegis.
And Taupo, where all the Tokelauans went to work in the forestry. All the Cook Islanders, they went to Tokorua, the Atutakians and the Mangaians particularly, way back in the 50s and 60s. And that's where I was born and lived in Tokorua for quite some number of years. But I've lived in Otara in South Auckland for the last 22 years, serving Auckland communities, particularly in different areas. So that's a little bit about who I am and what I do.
Beauty, Hamish. Hamish, if I can cut in there. Tell us, growing up in Tokorua, where there are a lot of Cook Islanders, you know, migrated from the islands to work there. Can you share with us growing up in Tokorua?
Yeah, I guess Tokorua is one of those places where everybody knows everyone. It's just like a small village. It was a growing village when we were growing up, and then later on with, you know, the changes in the world economies and that, forestry sort of got sold out and to different other players and that. And so then Tokorua started to lose population, I guess. But mostly the people there are just simply lovely. Growing up, very multicultural, because you had many different ethnic groups, Scottish, Dutch, German, English, Cook Island, and in the Cook Islands, Atutakians, Mangaians, Manahiki, all of those particular islands, Rarotongans, and then you had the Samoans, some Tongans, and the famous Fijian families we like to talk about, the Little Brothers,
and the
Campbells, the Campbells from Fiji, and so everyone knew everyone. We all played down the same streets. All the parents told us off because we were like their children. And so very much a rich community. And, you know, there were no fences in those days. So you ran across everybody's property. And we used to get up to mischief together with all our brothers and sisters of all different ethnics. So I think that was a really rich growing up in Tokorua, and that sort of set a foundation for a future of service.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Hamish, just share with us briefly your high school.
Well, high school in those days was a little bit traditional because, you know, in New Zealand, you know, we fail 50% of all of our students at school C. Absolutely. And, you know, so when you're in the third form, there's plenty of us Māori and Island children. And the trouble is we were invading the bottom end of the academic learning. When you're going through high school, quite challenging. Yes. You know, in those days, we didn't quite have the support because a lot of our parents didn't understand the English system that well. However, out of all my brothers and sisters who did and have done quite well, I was the one who got to the seventh form. Not showing off there, guys, but I did. And then I went on to university, to Otago University, to finish my commerce degree. When I got to the seventh form, there was only me. yes. as the island boy, and a Māori mate of mine, Richard Jeffries. We're still good mates today, and out of a class of about 20. So by the time you get to the seventh form, there's only about 20 kids left out of the 330 that started. So very different in those days. Today, there's a lot more inclusion and a lot more opportunities for our students, which I encourage all the way.
You know, you just with what you shared there, you made it right through, right up till seventh form. How was it that you were able to stay there that long?
Oh, I think, you know, the cool thing is we had some really, a lot of Cook Island mothers who were teachers at primary school and, you know, Mama Poko Morgan, Mama Puruku Hall, Mama Mi'i Tiokatai, they were all in the school system somewhere along the line. But when we were about 15, they decided to start up what they called was a coffee evening for all of us Pacific students. Yes. But really, coffee evening was just a disguise for study skills. Okay, so they encouraged us all. They were just supporting us. And so we were able to be encouraged to keep going. And if we didn't, we took up different vocations. Some became painters, builders, yes. mechanics, nurses, all of those kinds of things. It's just that I was the weirdo becoming an academic in terms of heading into accounting and pursuing that career.
Hamish, who were some mentors or people that influenced you at that particular age, you know, while you were at high school? Because that's a very, how shall I put it, a vulnerable time in anyone's life. You know, could go either way, you know. So who were some people or individuals that helped influence your choices?
Yeah, ultimately, my number one mentor was my mum. You know, she came from, born in Arurangi in Rarotonga. Her grandfather is from Iwerua in Mangaia. He also set the trend. He came out in World War I as part of the 500 soldiers. They fought with the Māori Battalion. So he travelled to New Zealand and on to Egypt and Sinai. And then my grandmother, who he met and married after World War I, is from Waipae. Waipae in Atatiki, as we all know, is the Hollywood of the Cook Islands.
Paradise.
Yeah. So I have both a show-off side of me and a stubborn Mangaian side of me, you know. So those are the things that we inherited. But my mum would be the number one mentor, plus all those mamas that I mentioned. Yes. And then the Orometuas in Tokoroa, Papa Taupo Peri, was one of my early mentors when I came out after varsity. He showed me how to work in the monks community and how to challenge some of those areas. And then Papa Bill Cuthers, and then there are other elders in the church that were always in the background supporting and encouraging.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Hamish. And what made you focus there on you decided to go to uni and you wanted to focus on a Bachelor of Commerce.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind there at the time?
Oh, I think, to be honest, I was from high school, probably being in the top streams. What I was really good at was maths. And maths comes very natural to our family. All my brothers and sisters are good at maths. My mother's good at maths. And so it sort of was just a natural gift, if I could say that. But it didn't take much to study it harder and then become good at it in accounting. So the accounting side was me. I wanted to make millions and millions of dollars. So, you know, that young thing's all going to go out there and make lots of money. But ultimately, you still got to do the yards. And then accounting became my biggest barrier, actually, because I realized I wasn't that flash at it, but I was a stubborn Mangaian descent. So I kept at it and until I passed it. And then once you get past it, then apply it in practice. So, yeah.
But then before you got into the workforce, from what I understand, you went over to the States?
Oh, no, that was later, Mel. I worked as a management accountant for New Zealand Forest Products for several years. And looked after the milling division for a little while. Then I sensed God's calling on my life. And that while I was an accountant, I was working with youth through Te Hauora, which was a Youth for Christ work amongst Māori and Pacific kids. Particularly kids who were getting into trouble and things like that. So I was giving back that way. And as I pursued my love of working in community, I sensed I needed to do my postgraduate at a Christian university in Philadelphia called Eastern University. And I did my MBA in economic development, working in third world and poor countries, because I felt that that was the sense of direction that I needed to take. I actually thought I was going to end up on the mission field, and I did. It just happened to be in Otara.
Okay, so you actually moved to the States and studied there?
Yeah, for 3 years in Philadelphia. And so again, you know, do your studies, work to pay the bills, and make sure you get through it. None of these scholarships that a lot of these fellas want these days, you know, just saying.
Absolutely.
Do the mahi.
You know, and you touched on your experience, the American culture. Yeah. You know, so how was it for you, that 3 years living in the States, in Philly, Philadelphia?
I think in many respects, the American culture is different, you know, and like New Zealand, you get both good and bad. And I think the main thing, it was very Western, very materialistic, I think is probably another way of saying it. And you see that here in New Zealand today. And I think the other thing, though, is that you meet some wonderful people there. And in my course, a lot of the students were actually from third world and poor countries as well, from Kenya, from South Africa, from Ghana, from China, Germany, Canada, and particularly Canada, the native indigenous people there. So we had a really good mix of internationals and then the local Americans, and I think that's the challenge. I really enjoyed the education there because it was much more intimate, if I could say that, much more smaller classrooms, more participation, and I liked the way the Americans get you to challenge things a little bit better than here in New Zealand, and bring your thinking to the table. Out there, though, when you're working in pretty challenging places like North Philadelphia, cross-culturally it can be challenging, particularly with African Americans and Latinos. And I did some work with a Latino outfit to help them improve their organization. A lot of HIV back in those days, but mostly from drugs, not from
sharing needles
. And so really it's about helping people to help themselves and to break those cycles. And so we're there for a very short time, helping them to look at their leadership challenge and how does that impact on their communities. So, yeah, wonderful experiences and to be able to get the opportunity to work alongside of that for at least a little bit of time.
Did you find it for yourself personally like a big culture shock, you know, dealing with those African Americans, Latinos?
Yeah, I think the little things that you sort of remember is like walking in to do an interview with a local employer who was employing African Americans or Latinos, and the first thing you come across is that you've got to buzz yourself in through the door. The second thing is that all of the windows are bulletproof. And then you've got to put all your questionnaires through, you know, under the screens because there's no personal contact. And then you get the comment like, hey, you're not from around here. If I was you, I'd get in your car and go home because you can get killed for $20 out there on the street. And You know, and I think those are the kinds of things. But us Kiwis, we tend to, you know, tend to ignore it, you know, because we feel confident in ourselves. And I guess there's a point where you need to be safe, but also there's a point where you also need to go and experience the real things. And so, yeah, it's just a matter of attitude, I guess.
Well, trying to process that. Okay, Hamish. So that's amazing that you completed your studies you know, in a whole different environment. What did you get up to after that, Hamish?
Well, my sense of calling was back to New Zealand rather than to Africa or Asia. And I have been involved in a missionary work in Asia for the last 30 years as well. So I sort of have that to one side, supporting my friends who are doing that work and rescuing children out of poverty and again, giving them education and giving them a future. And so I quite enjoy that element. But God's calling on me was really back to New Zealand. Okay. And I, you know, felt that all of the gifts and the strengths that I'd built up was going to be applied to working with our own families, our own communities, who also have their own journeys, you know, in life. And so I think, for me, that was South Auckland. So I came back and I got a job pretty much straight off the plane, working back in the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs. And back in 97, I believe, or 98, I became the regional manager for the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs here in Auckland, leading a team, consulting and developing community action plans. And so had some great consultations, some great people working alongside of me, including your auntie Hina there, Mel, but I'm showing my age now.
It's amazing. Can you share with us some of the, you know, some of the highlights you had working at the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs?
Yeah. Before I went to the US, I was actually working with the ministry before I left to the US, but based in Tokoroa. And one of the things that I, part of my job is I did a secondment down in the Prime Minister's office, working in the Employment Task Force. So that would have been back in 93, 94.
So you did a what there?
A secondment, or just a short assignment.
Oh, okay.
Maybe about 6 months.
Okay.
And that was really about, so out of that came initiatives called the Waka'o Strategy. And for the ministry, and that was the beginning of translating a lot of initiatives into the Pacific, such as early childhood centres. One of my mentors at the time was Mama Puko Morgan, who was also involved with a Samoan elder, Mama Robertson from Porirua, and they set up the Ango Matas and the Pacific early childhood, the beginning part of that. And so when I came back after working with the ministry again, in the community consultations, the same issues as the growth of early childhood centres and as a strategy. There's a lot of different initiatives that, you know, as you know in community action, some things grab fire and they really develop, and others sort of just die slowly and don't really go anywhere, but they'll come back later. And so a lot of initiatives really resonate with leadership in the community, and you know the ones that'll go ahead because it'll have the momentum of the people, and that's the way it should be. Where you just got maybe the odd person advocating, it doesn't tend to catch fire, but where you have like the early childhood movement really grabbed fire, and I think that's still on its journey as well. It's just it grew back then, but it's much bigger today. But in the future, it'll be even bigger as we see a renaissance of our culture and our languages being rediscovered in those punangas and those angoamatas and all of those Early Childhood Centre. So that's one thing, very proud of supporting our leaders in those fields to be able to achieve that. That's just one example, huh?
Beautiful. Okay, and so obviously you threw your hat into the community and the public sector, is that correct?
Yes, correct. And then I left the public sector to set up my own company.
Yes.
Then I assisted government agencies, the Ministry of Health, the Department of Internal Affairs, to then go back to help our communities. So I worked up and down the country from Invercargill to Whangarei with a team of workers to assist our community groups to develop stronger organisations, you know. So whether they be Samoan or Tongan or Cook Island or Pan Pacific, we sort of pretty much did that for about the next 10 years.
So this company you set up, it was a consulting company?
Yes, yes. You know, I don't like saying consulting, because, you know, it's not a nice word. But it's accurate, though, because it is about talking with people, connecting people, and making sure that they're getting on with their, you know, their visions, their missions, their goals that they want to achieve. So, yeah, that's
And
us.
You did that for the next 10 years?
Yeah, pretty much. And we did some pretty good work during that time, and then that's what led me to Pacific Home Care.
Yes.
And,